Let's get started.
Okay.
Do you want to do the intro?
You can do the intro.
Okay. Welcome to 3 out of 3 Falls, a wrestling podcast where we discuss 3 matches. One chosen by myself, one chosen by my co-host, and one chosen by a random match generator. I want to call it the selector, by the way, because it doesn't generate. I guess it... Anyway, my name's Joe.
And my name's Jason.
And we've each picked a match. We're going to start this time with the match I picked. That was Jason's choice. I'm not demanding that we do that. And we were just discussing before the intro music played, and as it played, Reigns, Rollins, KO, and Jericho, and the mix of those four in this main event scene on Raw, and the prospect of, you know, tag matches between them, and a fatal four-way or whatever, and how kind of that mix doesn't excite me personally very much. And I thought that would be a good segue into this match. Which is the first match. Sheamus and Randy Orton versus Chris Jericho and Alberto Del Rio from Monday Night Raw on May 7th, 2012. I unfortunately don't have the number, the episode number of Raw. I apologize.
How dare you?
May 7th, 2012. We'll have a link to it in the blog that we're talking about making. for this podcast. We'll have a link to the network for it. And I'll put the number in there and the text there too. But this was a match where I think, Jason, if it's okay with you, I'll open with why I picked this match.
Go for it.
And I will start by saying that rewatching this match, for much of the match I thought, why did I pick this match? But not in like a negative way, more in like a neutral way, you know. But why I picked this match boils down to character work and details.
Okay.
Because I remember watching this match for some reason back. So most of the time I've been watching wrestling in the modern era, I have not watched Raw live. But for some reason I watched this episode of Raw. And I remember talking, I think to you, I feel like I brought this match up to strangers, or I was thinking about it when I was talking to strangers about what I liked about wrestling, which is totally bizarre, right? I feel like I talked about this with our friend Aubrey, who has a podcast and YouTube show called Straight Shoot. So maybe he talked about it on Straight Shoot, if that was going in 2012. I can't remember. I don't know.
I think it may have. I don't know. But continue.
I don't know what was said about this match in the past, really. Except it stuck with me in my brain as a match that was just kind of this random match on Raw. Semi-random. These guys had been in the main event scene for the World Heavyweight title. I think one of them held it. Sheamus was holding it at the moment. And he got it from Brian. And Jericho had just fought Punk. And Del Rio was feuding with Sheamus. And Orton was just like needing a thing to do. And these guys were kind of semi-mixed up with one another. So they had the two faces versus the two heels on Raw, which starts off the build to a fatal four-way in 2 weeks or so after this at a pay-per-view called Over the Limit, I believe. Terrible name for a pay-per-view. So this is just one of those two faces versus two heels matches on Raw. But the way I remembered it was all of these guys, and maybe, again, another like sort of tangent, maybe Raw's tag division, or WWE's tag division at this point, was really rough. I can't remember who
was
in it.
This was before kind of the revival of the tag team scene where, you know, you have actual gimmick tag teams.
Yeah. And the Shield.
And harkening back to like the 80s and 90s, where, you know, you had two members of a tag team combination who had, you know, specific characters and outfits and stuff like that. This was whenever their idea of a tag team was two major stars put together to make a mega tag team, like Jericho. Like whenever Big Show and Jericho were a tag team. And at this time, you know, that was the Raw brand's idea of what a perfect tag team would be.
But I want to say that these two random pairings of faces and heels, well, the reason I like this match when I watched it originally, I think, each character is their own character. They're out there kind of like on a team because they're the good guys or they are the bad guys. And the bad guys work together in a neat, fun way. And the good guys sort of work together, but then like get into a squabble at the end because of a mistake. And like they're each inhabiting their characters, I thought, so well and so professionally. And they do, especially Jericho and Del Rio, do like simple tag team double team moves that I felt like I had not been seeing, like kind of old school tag action, you know?
Well, the more than likely, it's because originally each of the two team members, both Jericho and Del Rio, more than likely their origins in the business were in tag teams.
Yeah,
I think
Jericho,
I think
plenty of
Jer
experience.
Jericho Jericho had a tag team with
Lance Storm.
Lance Storm,
Were they like the
and I
thrill
don't know
seekers
about
or
Del Rio,
something?
but just knowing the nature of the Mexican scene that, you know, they love tag team wrestling. So you have to have that training. You're not just trained to be a solo performer. You know, you have to
Yeah.
have that mythology in your arsenal.
But they also, so they do tag team, they tag and then do a double team, but they also have these moments. Here's the main reason I picked this match. When I
Okay.
was watching it, it happened and it all came back to me. Jericho does an enziguri and lands and he's on his knees and he points at Del Rio and says something to him because Del Rio earlier in the match does an enziguri. And that attention to detail, two dirtbags doing this jumping kick to the back of the head, and Jericho doing it after Del Rio, and he's like, "That I like, we're on the same page, buddy." Like, not only do they do tag team, double teams, and then Jericho echoes a move Del Rio did, and they're both working Sheamus's shoulder, and they're both doing a lot of kicks, but he's so in the moment as his character that he'll do a double team with them, but he'll still acknowledge that they are not a traditional tag team, you know?
Gotcha.
So it's not just the boring, untraditional tag team, two guys mashed together. There's details where he's acknowledging that they've been mashed together, but they're both jerks, and they recognize that on an instinctive level. And Jericho can also do a jumping kick to the back of a guy's head, but he won't just let that stand. He'll be like, "Yeah, buddy, you know, like, we're on the same page. We both want to kick this dude in the back of the head in the same way."
Sure. But rather than saying, "Yeah, buddy," wouldn't he say, "Yeah, baby"?
Yeah, well, he says something else, but he
Well,
points and says something. Did you
he
catch that
raises
moment?
he raises his arm and he screams, "Best in the world," at one
Wait,
point.
and then after he does that, I wrote this down. It's one of my favorite things. He raises his arm and yells, "Best in the world." And you think he's going to do something huge to prove that he's the best in the world, but he does a driving punch. He goes,
Which is
"Best in the
just
world," and then he does like,
great, great heel work.
exactly. He does,
Great heel
that's
work.
right before the enziguri.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, oh, and then he kneels. So he does the enziguri, then he kneels on Orton's head and flexes at Sheamus, which is hilarious. And then there's all these, I'm just going to rant off a bunch of things really quick.
Yes, very, very
Jericho comes
quickly,
out
'cause
with
we're
shifty eyes and
almost to the
grins.
limit.
No way. I've talked this whole time. This is terrible. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I thought the commentary was good,
Yes.
shockingly. Even with bad guy Michael Cole, they mentioned that Jericho was livid because of his matches with Punk, and he acts miserable and jerky in the match. They work the shoulder. I just bought every minute of this. His bitching at the end, the brogue kick at the end to Orton on accident. For this type of match, I felt like all of these guys gave 110% in a match situation where most guys would barely give 100, you know? I feel like these guys
Sure.
have done it so much. None of these guys needed to give more than 70. 'Cause who fucking cares about this match, you know?
Yeah, it's
But
just a raw
it's
match.
so solid. So
Yeah,
I've got a
no, it's
couple
good.
more a couple other things I wanted to talk about. I'm sorry we went over, and I'll try to talk faster next time, but let me know what did you think of this match?
So really quickly,
We can go over,
I
fuck it.
really quickly, I just wanted to say that, myself, I already have a bias against television matches. I don't think I'm a huge fan of them. The commercial breaks just kind of take the wind out of my enthusiasm. It doesn't make me sit on the edge of my seat to, have a huge move, and then they go out to the outside, and then they come back from commercial and they're in a rest hold. It doesn't do anything for me. However, this was a decent television tag team match. Things that I noticed were, people love Randy Orton. Huge response for him in 2012, which by that time he was a 9-time world champion, which is amazing to me just to see how devalued the title is in 2012.
Let
You
me
know,
jump
it's
in
just,
there and say
go ahead.
one of the other things I wanted to talk about, and I think you're going to start talking about this right now, is face Sheamus and face Orton, and how, I don't know about you, but I generally think of them as not good in that role, but
Yes,
they
I,
got
yeah, go ahead.
huge pops. The fans are thrilled when Sheamus makes his comeback. Orton gets a huge pop when he comes out. They're
Yeah.
chanting Randy, which is maybe the most boring chant ever. I have a note that says,
Yeah,
"Are
I,
all those
one of
people
the
are
notes that I
standing?"
have down is,
They're all standing. The crowd is standing for this
yeah.
match. They're that into this match, this bullshit match with where the good guys are not very good at being good guys. Although Sheamus, even though he looks dumb and this entrance theme is terrible, he was believably a powerhouse. But they fucking love these people.
Yeah, no, they love them. They love them. I noted that, Orton over huge. Me personally, I think that Orton prefers to be a tweener. He wants to be like the cool bad guy, so he can just, do dickish things, get put over, and people love to hate him or begrudgingly cheer him. I think that a question I had for you was, do you think Sheamus prefers to be a heel or a face?
Who fucking cares? Just keep him a heel. I think he prefers to be a heel, and it's because he wrestles with so
Because the
much glee as a heel. And
yeah.
as a face, like paying knowing him as a heel, I didn't watch his initial heel run. So watching him as a face, I was just always bored. Even though he has a reasonably cool moveset, and he comes off as brutal. Like, he seems powerful. He kicks Jericho really high. He does brutal knees. Those stupid chest pounds are brutal and cool looking in
Yeah.
hindsight. At the time when they were happening, I was just like, this guy is so boring. But now that he can do all that stuff with a shit-eating grin and a braided beard and a mohawk
Yeah,
and
yeah.
react to fans booing him, he just looks so much more into it now.
Yeah. My rationale behind him wanting to be a heel more than a face was the, bibbidi bobbidies in his beard.
Yeah.
He loves the braided beard. He loves to look like an asshole. He loves to just have that shit-eating grin on his face and have people hate him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that would be the more fun character anyway, to
Yeah.
play for anybody. But the thing that surprised me about this is just how much the fans were into this. Like, can you imagine this match on Raw now? And this is also, I have a note here. How far are we from Sheamus versus Orton birthing all of the biggest boos and worst chants ever post-WrestleMania? Do you remember that
Oh
match?
yes.
Wasn't that
Yes, I
Sheamus
do remember
Orton?
that match.
Or was it like
That was
Sheamus
sh
Big? Oh, Big Show comes out and punches them and people
Yeah.
chant, "Thank you, Big Show." Was that like
Yeah.
neck the year after this or something?
It was 2 years afterwards because that was at the height of like Daniel Bryan mania.
Yeah. Well,
That was
that
whenever
was.
people
Wasn't that 2013?
twenty
No,
th yeah,
that was
twenty no
2014.
Yeah, it's 2014, I think. But yeah, it's at the height of that. And by that time, the interactions between those two characters, Orton and Sheamus, in 2012, that was still relatively, recent. By 2014, they had probably already wrestled, 8 times, if not more. And been, given the nature of how this match ended, that was leading towards a larger angle between those two characters. So, they had probably wrestled a bunch of times, and people were just like, really, the night after WrestleMania, you really want to show us this? We are bored. And they vocalized it very loudly.
And
But.
crowds can be different, but just seeing everyone standing on their feet with bated breath to see can Sheamus and Orton pull it out over Jericho and Del Rio on Raw 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view in May, like enchanting Randy. I don't know. That blew my mind. That was a big surprise about this because when I watch clips from Raw, almost like, and it's in the middle of a match, it's the part that they show from a match. Crowds are sitting down and not doing anything. And I'm not just talking the Bo Dallas clips. I'm talking clips from Rollins versus Jericho 40 or whatever, or even Reigns versus, you know what I mean? Like, this is not the main event. This is a middle of the show rando match. And I also want to apologize. Half of the match is entrances on Raw.
Yeah,
Just waste 20 minutes for entrances.
this is a top of the hour trying to get your ratings up TV match.
I don't
But
know.
it was overall, it was good. It was good. I think it was good.
So let's move to another tag match.
Match 2 from SummerSlam 1989, the Brainbusters, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson versus the Hart Foundation. Now, do you know any of the build up behind this match, Joe?
You know, that's one of the questions. I have my notes begin with a series of questions for you.
Okay. Let's go for them, go for the questions.
I will
Let's go.
ask you these questions. One was about the build-up.
Sure.
I wanted to ask how are the titles not on the line? They talk about the contract being signed before the Brainbuster won the title, but wouldn't you just change the match? It's SummerSlam. I'm going to go through the rest of my questions and then you can answer all of them or just tell me what you wanted to do.
Well, let's do
You
one
want to
at a
go one at
time.
a time?
So
Okay.
we'll go one at a time. So the first question is, why aren't the titles on the line? That goes back to the build for the match. So technically, on the house show circuit, Demolition had been fighting the Brainbusters for the tag team championship. About 3 weeks before this SummerSlam match, the Brainbusters and Demolition had a 2 out of 3 falls tag team championship match on Saturday night's main event, which the Brainbusters won. So technically, given the nature of how the WWF built their pay-per-views at the time, they started building, started announcing the card about six-ish weeks in advance. They would have the SummerSlam report that would come on WWF Superstars, or a report that would be on Primetime Wrestling, where they would start to announce all the matches. The Brainbusters versus the Hart Foundation was already announced, so it does make sense for it to not be a tag team championship match. It is actually smarter of Bobby Heenan to keep it as a non-title match, because the Brainbusters don't have anything to lose in one of the at that time may top four events that the WWF had at the time. The people who are really put in a really shitty situation are the Hart Foundation, because if they win, they don't win the championship. If they lose, they're out of contention for probably actually a year, because they didn't get another shot for the championship until SummerSlam 1990. So it's actually good managerial thinking on the part of Bobby Heenan to
So,
keep this as a
wait,
non-title match.
you are telling me that the storyline gain for Bobby Heenan outweighs the importance of having a tag team title match in an era where you have three championships? Did they have a
Yes.
women's championship at this time?
Not at that time,
So you have
but
three championships and you're going into
yes.
your second biggest pay-per-view of the year, and you're
Yeah.
not going to put one on the line so that Bobby the Brain, a guy already called the Brain, seems smart.
Because he already has his main champion in his stable, Rick Rude, putting his title up on the line at that event.
I mean,
If
I
because
like.
since Rude is going to lose the Intercontinental Championship, it keeps the Heenan family strong to have a championship in that stable.
Still, I like. Well, first of all, the Brainbusters win.
They do. They do. They
I
do win.
like the idea that all of that thought went into the Heenan family and Bobby the Brain, strange machinations behind the scenes, right? But
Yeah.
they would never do that now.
No, they would never do that now. But at that time in
That's
89,
crazy to go into SummerSlam.
they didn't have to do that. It's a showcase for your champions, it's a showcase for a high profile contender tag team who put on an amazing match that is purely competitive.
Well, here's a.
It
Okay.
doesn't have any title on the line. It's purely just mat, technical, a little bit of brawling. It's just straight wrestling.
I sort of agree with that, except for the fact that there are clear bad guys. But my question is, were the Hearts clear good guys at this point?
So, in a similar way that Randy Orton is, a cool bad guy, the Hart Foundation were cool good guys who still had heelish tendencies,
Yes.
but that added the allure of their kind of like icy distance to their like dynamic. It's almost, it's similar to Braun Strowman on Tinder. He's
Yeah.
a very he's probably, you swipe right on him, you say, "Hey, what's up, Seth?" And he'll be like, "Yeah, chilling."
Sends you a gif of
Not
a running power slam.
yeah, something like that. He's not going to give too much. The Hearts will, they're not going to give too much. They still are going to, they're going to hold on to the ropes when they need to. They're going to yank the hair. They're going to pull it tight. They still have those heelish tendencies because they were such huge dick heels whenever they were a heel tag team.
Okay. My next question is actually, how do the old pay-per-views always make it seem like there are more people there? But let's skip that one. The Brainbusters have no music?
No music. I think that, well, first of all, it's kind of hard to come up with an appropriate theme for a tag team called the Brainbusters. It's, that's just hard. I
Squealing
think that
guitar.
eventually they were working, yeah, squiddly guitar, is that what you called
Squealing
it?
guitar. Just get
Squealing
a
guitar.
guitar solo.
Yeah, because they didn't really, Tully and Arn didn't have a theme in the NWA either. I think that eventually they were working up towards having a overall Heenan family theme, like in the way that the Twin Towers, Akeem and the Big Boss Man's theme was actually Slick's theme song.
Oh,
So I think that eventually in the works that the Heenan family had kind of continued in the way that it was, that they would have given an overall theme to, Heenan in general. Because Andre didn't have a theme, Haku didn't have a theme, Brainbusters didn't have a theme, Rude had a theme, but he had a theme before he even got hooked up with Bobby Heenan.
Okay, yeah.
So that's what I think. It is awkward to see in 1989 a performer or a group of performers who do not have themes. Given just the kind of the marketing machine that the WWF was at that time.
Yeah.
Did you like the match?
Yes, but I'm perplexed by it and I have a lot more questions. My
Okay,
actually
go
my
for it. Let's keep going.
well
What's your
okay.
biggest
My
question?
biggest section of notes is about moves. So
Okay.
I put them
What
all
do you
in one
have?
section because I
Go
couldn't
for it.
not make those notes, but we don't need to do a play by play. My first question, well okay, not, my eighth question for you is I want to hear why you picked this match, besides what you told me before about how it's just a solid exhibition match with two teams that you love.
two words, Arn Anderson.
Okay.
I am a huge Arn Anderson mark, and I think that this match is the best match of his and Tully's short-lived WWF run.
Really?
Yes.
That plays right into my perplexing notes for this.
Okay.
Because I thought this looked like a passing of the torch or something like that. At one point, Ventura, Jesse the Body Ventura, says, "I can't believe at this point in the match how the Hart Foundation has completely dominated the action. The Hart Foundation destroys the Brainbusters for the vast majority of this match. And not
they
even
do.
In a way that the Brainbusters... A lot of it is the Brainbusters' fault. Because another note I have is that it's weird that the Brainbusters seem so dumb rather than crafty and nefarious. Until the very end, when the Brain gets in and they distract and they get the win, they keep fucking themselves over with dumb tags. They do there's a spot where where I think Tully tags in on Arn's foot.
Yes.
And then just hurts them. And the Hart Foundation is just sweet move after sweet move, you know, like just beating the crap out of these guys and looking fantastic. These dudes who come out with I understand that their gimmick is sort of not even back to basics. It's just basics, right? I don't know. I was just confused. I thought Arn had a lot of great moments of like kind of selling, but it just looked like they were putting over the Hart Foundation insanely.
They were, but I think that seeing how well the two tag teams worked together, like the Brainbusters still, like their character at that time was that they are shitty heels who are sneaky but kind of do dumb shit every once in a while to get themselves in trouble. Okay. That was the same kind of character that they had in the NWA. You know, they were thought of as they could be legit badasses when they needed to be, but overall they were just kind of like shitty chicken shit heels. I liked the way that they put over the Hart Foundation. It's the epitome of what I think good heel selling is. You know, it comes from, to me, it comes from the mythology of, you know, if you're going to make someone, if you're going to put them over, like take everything that they've got, really put them over. But at the end, you're going to do some sneaky shit, keep your heat and win. Like that, I think that both characters left this match in a stronger position in the fans' minds. Both the Hart Foundation as contenders, because they really put it to them and they really looked like they were going to win. And the Brainbusters look like even shittier, sneakier heels that you want to boo and hiss and throw things at, because they, you know, tricked. They used tomfoolery and sneaky tactics to win this great match.
Let me pose a rhetorical question here, though.
Sure.
Do you think it's better that they look like morons through most of the match than if they were doing crafty tricks? And so I guess there's two types of putting over. There's if the Brainbusters were doing crafty tricks and controlling the match, but the good guys powered through and were able to outsmart them or overpower their smarts, right? That's one way you could do this match. But the other way they did it, the way they did it was the Brainbusters are just looked outclassed for 90% of the match. And then at the very end, one trick is all it takes and they win. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. I still hold to the theory that each of the teams look stronger throughout this match through the various stories that they're telling. You know, the Hearts still look like really strong, slightly heelish, tweener baby faces. The Brainbusters look like shitty heels. They do look like buffoons, but they also look like buffoons against teams like the Road Warriors and the NWA. Like, people love to see Arn and Tully get the shit beat out of them.
Okay, yeah. They look like buffoons, but yet they win, and then that can be frustrating. That provides the heat.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. I wonder how that would fly right now. Because last time we talked at the beginning of the podcast, I don't think you can hear it, about the revival and how we love the revival. But there's a
Oh,
huge
yeah.
difference between the revival and the Brainbusters. And that's that the revival usually is in control of a match.
Yes, but they're doing a different methodical kind of tag team
Yeah.
match. Like the way that they put together their match is different from the
And
way
people.
that the obvious give and take that was this Brainbusters and Hart Foundation match. Because this was basically blocked out like a match that Bret Hart and Tully Blanchard put together with a little bit of Arn, and Anvil is just like, okay, what am I doing? Okay.
Has
Like it's blocked out like a Bret Hart and Tully Blanchard put together match.
is there a Jim Neidhart match where he does not have a sweat or oil stain on his singlet at the beginning of the match?
Good question. Maybe that's in a forthcoming
Okay,
podcast.
yeah. There's another thing I wanted to talk to you about this match. Talk to you about this match. Kind of like a tie-in to the first match we talked about in terms of details.
Sure.
This I think this match is like, but I don't think we have time to go through this. Kind of in two ways. One is simpler moves, and you see Jericho doing this all the time, like with that diving punch. Or another, I wrote a note about the double axe handle off the ropes, which is a move Jericho does, and nobody else since 1992, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like. Kind of simple, like punches and basic locks. They don't do a suplex until near the end of the match, you know?
And it was a beautiful suplex by Bret Hart.
Yes.
Beautiful.
But they don't really do, like, a reverse atomic drop is a huge spot in this match. But it's also because
Yes.
of how Arn sells them working his arm when he shakes it like he's lost feeling in his hand. How
Oh
Arn
yeah,
sells
it's in the
getting.
details. It's all in the details.
They do, like, measured punches. When they punch Anvil in the head and he falls, I bought it. You know, like all these little moves, they're so good at the details that you buy the driving knee as a, oh my gosh, that could turn the
Yeah.
match, a driving knee. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
these basic moves. And I think we can have that as a bigger conversation sometime, another time when we do a match from this era, because talking about the different styles, right?
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, no, totally. Totally.
I guess I wanted to, God, too much. Do you want to end? How do you want to end this, talking about this match?
Ask me when, well, you like the match.
Do you like referee Joey Morella better? No, I'm kidding.
Ask like if you have one final kind of like question about this
I
match,
don't have
just
to ask it. I mean, there we go. It is on the table. What is, you told us why you picked this match.
sure.
What is the final takeaway?
Final takeaway is the idea that I brought up earlier, where this is a perfect depiction of two teams that came in at a certain level and they left at an even higher level in their individual positions. You know, like the Hart, they could have taken that onto the house show scene and tore the house down with that tag team match. Like
Okay.
if their program had continued, which it didn't, because the Brainbusters immediately went back to fighting Demolition. But I really like this as a match where it's scientific, but it has brawling, but it also has, you know, each of the characters living up to the nature of their characters. And each team's left the match in a stronger position than when they went in. That's why I like this match so much.
All right.
And because it's Arn Anderson, and I love Arn Anderson.
Yeah. Details.
It's all in the
Inhabiting
details.
your character.
Yeah, it's all in the details.
Executing with excellence. Man, Bret Hart is so good.
Yeah, he is.
Every
He
movement
really
that guy makes. Why even I mean, obviously we know the layout of his career, but watching him in this match is just like, what a talent. Like, holy smokes, you know?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Okay. Moving, I guess that's as good of a segue as we can get We got the excellence out of the way. Let's
That's
move
right.
on to the to a complete lack of excellence. No, maybe not. In our third match, the pick from the random match generator is the 8-man Texas Tornado Tough Man Contest from Global Wrestling Federation USWA Main Event, October 6, 1990. It may also have been part of something called the Renegades Rampage, which is what it says on the mat, I believe. So I don't
I
know
don't
if.
know what the I don't know what the Renegades Rampage is. I think that it's probably some local tractor pull organization has purchased this ring mat for USWA to use as free advertising at the Sportatorium in Texas.
Before the
Now,
commercial break,
one thing, go ahead.
before this match airs, there's a commercial break. And the kind of teaser for what happens after the commercial break shows a little bit of the match going on and a text that reads next colon tough guys. And tough is spelled TUFF. And I think that says it all.
It does.
We can just end the podcast now.
Now,
Because
one thing that I wanted to point out real quick is just timing wise, this is from October 1990, which is about the time that I became a huge wrestling fan.
oh, it's because of this match.
So, Joe, run through who's in the match.
Well, first I want to go through the rules of this match,
Okay, let's
which
go through the rules and then we'll tell you who's in it.
Let me explain the rules quickly. We have two teams, four men on each team. It starts out like a regular tag team bout until a man gets pinned, one, two, three. When that happens, the bout is not over. The winning team of the man who got pinned, who did the pinning actually, then will pick a tough man off the other team and gang up on him four on one for a full minute. At the end of the minute, if the man who's been beaten up on can get up to his feet at the count of 10, then the bout goes on. We all start over again. If he doesn't, it's over.
Yes.
So this match is, in short, completely insane. And
Yeah, I have three words down. Cocaine logic booking
there,
on this.
it must be my notes. I tried to organize these notes and I just wrote no point in organizing this. There are, so the teams are on the side of the evildoers. Team leader-ish guy, Skandor Akbar, who may or may not be Rusev's dad.
He was a
He's great.
old manager. He was an old manager from World Class Championship Wrestling in
He's
Texas.
smoking a cigar in the middle of the match.
Yeah.
During the match, on the apron, he's a wrestler in the match, and he's just smoking, arrogantly smoking a cigar. The guy's awesome. You
And
have
shrugging every once in a while.
gorgeous Gary Young.
Who is not gorgeous?
No. He's like a low rent Rick Rude. Is that what you described him as to me?
Yeah, a curly mulleted Rick Rude who does not have abs.
No. Then you have possibly my favorite man in this match, the Missouri Tiger Jeff Gaylord.
Who is completely swollen,
Roided to the gills.
roided to the gills.
He's hilarious. Flexing
Yeah.
behind Skandor's head, just running around the match like I'm obviously enormous compared to everyone else. And
Sure.
then there's who else is on their team?
Stunning
Oh,
Steve
Stunning Steve Austin.
Austin.
How could I forget? How could I forget that Stunning Steve Austin? I have a great one of my favorite notes is that they try to choose a tough man. Or no, they're trying to. Eric Embry wants to start with Skandor because he hates Skandor. But
Yeah.
instead, the consolation prize is that he gets to wrestle one of the most who a man who would go on to become one of the most successful and popular sports entertainers in the history of the business. Wise, it's amazing that Steve Austin is just amazing. It's amazing his career trajectory. Watching him in this match and knowing that, half of the people in this match I had never heard of and would never hear of again. Until, you know what I mean? Like, if the random match generator somehow gives us another gorgeous Gary Young match, I'll find Gary Young and write him a check for $10. I don't know. Like, what if he's
See,
alive? I just.
I grew up watching these people. So I'm very
Wait.
familiar with the career trajectory of each of these
You
people.
know the Missouri Tiger, Jeff Gaylord? That guy's awesome.
I certainly do. He USWA was Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Lawler's federation that they ran at, out of Memphis. Now, at that time in 1990, they had a partnership. They technically owned the Texas territory that the Von Erichs had because World Class went belly up after Super Clash 88. So technically, this is USWA. Steve Austin was in the USWA. He would wrestle in Memphis. He would wrestle in Nashville. He would wrestle in Louisville, and then they would have to drive down to Texas. Yeah, it was brutal. It's a classic territory. Actually, one of the last of the major territories that existed up until the late 90s, up until 98, 99, it was
Holy
still a
shit.
territory. Yeah, it was one of the very last ones. And I used to watch it every Saturday morning.
I also want to point out, if I were a kid watching this on Saturday morning, or if I was a person watching it in that arena, as ridiculous as this match is, I would have loved every second of it. You can tell why. And they cheer the so the team of the good guys, which I'll go through right
Yes.
now, as
Yes, go
each
ahead.
one enters the ring, I'm like, is the crowd going to like this guy as much as they like the last guy? Because they certainly seem to like the last guy way more than he deserves to be liked. And yes, they do. They like everyone. They love all of these people. So we have, I think the team leader, my guess would be Jeff Jarrett, because he actually is like a guy who looks like a wrestler. He's in shape and stuff. But I think the crowd favorite at the start is Eric Embry. They
Yeah,
love, he
he's
comes out with
over
a
huge.
rose. And they love him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and he seems to be in a feud with Skandor Akbar, who is like the leader of the evil bad guys.
Yeah.
Then you have Jeff Jarrett, who you, I feel like I could talk to, I could listen to, you probably can tell me so much about Jeff Jarrett.
I could
Jeff
actually.
Jarrett is one of two of the of three wrestlers in this match that I knew anything about, like that I watched growing up, you know, because when he was on WWE and a little bit on WCW. Then we have, oh boy, we've got Bill Dundee. He enters the arena from through a portal from 1950, and they're brought up by Percy Pringle, who would go on to be Paul Bearer, the Undertaker's manager. Percy is in a weird Mario Brothers outfit. He's looking trim-ish, and the big, I thought Percy would be, I thought the good guys would lose because Percy would be pinned and beaten up on, because he's the obvious underdog.
Yeah.
You see him and you cannot believe. Like, I have a note, will they cheer for Percy? And then I have a note, wow, huge cheers for Percy. He is not great at punching.
Now, Percy Pringle's gimmick was kind of like a low rent Bobby Heenan, basically. Hence the dyed blonde hair, everything like that. Like he had recently turned face, I think, because he was on his way out of the territory to become Paul Bearer in the WWF.
Okay. So the way this match goes is that they have a sort of regular tag team match, and then a guy gets pinned, and then everyone stops and deliberates about, like, huddles and deliberates about, it just kills the match, about who they're going to pick. And then you think they're going to pick the weakest, most tired or oldest guy to beat up on, and instead they pick the best looking, best in shape, in best shape, strongest person. So they pick, the good guys pick the Missouri Tiger, Jeff Gaylord, and then the bad guys pick Jeff Jarrett. And it's, you're just like, why didn't you pick Pringle? And then it ends
Yeah.
when they get to pick Skandor, and they beat Skandor. So what did you think? Talk to me. What did you think about this match?
Well, I thought that it was fun. I watched it with my wife, Azelle, and she was watching it and she kept remarking how this is fun. Like, she kept saying, this is fun. Like, this is enjoyable. This isn't, this is different from the other wrestling that you watch,
Yes.
Jason. If more wrestling was like this, I'd probably like it more. So I felt like that gave it, two thumbs up in my book. It was a fun match. It was obviously a crowd pleaser match, probably at the very end of a very long taping of multiple episodes of USWA, GWF, Power Hour, or whatever, to send the crowd home happy. It did its job. Eric Embry is over like Rover and
Wild.
Wild, and it was a fun match. The random match generator, you have redeemed yourself from the SmackDown fiasco of last time. More USWA, please.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. We've talked about six matches now, and I like all of them. This match is just batshit crazy, but it is very fun. It is fun to watch, and I mean, when they pick Jarrett to beat up on, his teammates are just standing in the ring, not even on the apron, cheering him on, like inches from his head, as he gets beaten up by all of the other team. And somehow, even though that is nonsensical, it is like shockingly fun and hilarious to watch. It's not even like hilarious in a ironic way, you know? It's just like funny and fun.
It is. It is. It was a fun. It was a fun match. It brought me back to why I actually like to watch wrestling in the first place. So I thought that the timing of it from October 1990, at the same time that I became a wrestling fan, was apt.
That's
My
great.
reaction to, my reaction to this match would have been the same when I was 8 years old. So I n not a whole lot has changed in those in between years.
That's great. Thank you, Random Match Generator. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Three Out of Three Falls for yet again or for the first time. I have no idea. But,
We'll be back next time.
yes, we will, with three more matches. In fact, I'm going to run the generator now, Jason, so it's staying on.
Thanks, guys.